Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa Buddhang dhammang sangham namassami. I wanted to read to you from one of the commentaries about the seven factors of non-decline. What are we not declining from? Being well, being happy, being peaceful. And for spiritual seekers, the non-decline would be the opposite of declining, which is we would not stray from that which gives us happiness, well-being, and peace. We could contemplate together so that we know what brings inclination instead of declination, ascending towards or improving our chances of developing happiness, well-being, and peace. Are we not happy? Are we not well? Are we not peaceful? In general, everybody looks pretty happy. But when we're out in the world, things make us worry and feel anxiety or fear or stress. Different times in our lives when we've suffered from decline. The Buddha gave this discourse. Monks, I shall expound to you a set of seven factors of non-decline. Listen and pay good attention. So long as disciples are instilled with faith, grounded in faith, grounded in conviction, they are bound to progress spiritually. There's no reason for decline. We could make a comparison to the road to the hermitage. So to get here, you had to follow a map. You're pretty convinced that that road is going to lead here. If you haven't been down that road, but somebody told you, if you follow this road, you'll come here, and you trust that person because they've given you directions before. But sometimes it's wrong, and you end up in a field or at a lake instead of at Satisarnya Hermitage. Or you look on a map and you follow it. But if you don't know the way, then what will you trust? How will you know how to get here? If you don't have a map, no one's given you directions, how would you get here? So the person who has faith in a spiritual way, then they would follow the guidelines and be convinced. Conviction comes from the word convinced, like you know that this is going to get you where you want to go. But on the spiritual path, the way is very long. It seems very long. It can appear to be very long before we have a happiness that is imperturbable and a peace of mind that is undisturbed by what's going on around us or by our habits of mind, by our fears, our worries, our stresses in life. Our peace gets interrupted. So then that would disturb our faith in the way. What is this? Where is this way? I've lost the way. But the spiritual seeker who has that kind of imperturbable, undisturbed faith, the conviction is so strong that no matter what obstacles or what disturbances appear, they are not deterred by that. They are not discouraged. They keep going. So I'm sure all of you have experienced things in life that could be very discouraging for most, but you just keep going. And you keep trying because you trust the way. For me, there have been times when I've had great obstacles in this life as a bhikkhuni or as an alms mendicant, when I didn't get enough food and I didn't get the support. But you just keep going, keep trying, keep working at it, and the way opens up in front of us. There is that certain quality of faith, the supreme faith. Then we have this determination. It's called adhitana. You are not going to be deterred from it. But we know that that kind of result, it's something that we cannot do for each other. We have to do it ourselves. And we can't get it from the world. There's no amount of money that will win you this lottery. But I think that it's winnable by everyone if we put in the right factors. And faith is one of them. So the second thing is monks, as long as the disciples feel ashamed of doing evil, they are bound to progress, for there is no reason for their decline. And what he means by progress is spiritually. This is a really important one. We have to have a sense of moral rightness, of moral health, to follow certain principles which protect us from harming ourselves or harming others ethically. And the world seems on a fast track to dispense with morality. So we're on a fast track to protect morality. The very fabric of our humanity is made up of a moral fiber. And if we lack that moral fiber, then our spiritual aspirations are doomed, pretty much. The Buddha also re-emphasizes that in the third factor. So long as monks or disciples have fear of wrongdoing, they are bound to progress spiritually. There is no reason for decline. So the being ashamed of doing wrong or harming or breaking that moral fiber that we're protecting, and the fear of doing wrong. So there are two sides to this. And these two qualities are, they're kind of the pillars of the whole thing. And in Pali, they're called hiri and otapa. Hiri is moral shame. It means that when we do something that causes harm to our moral fiber or our moral well-being, or we harm anybody else intentionally, then we can feel shame about that. And if we harm, but we're not cognizant of that, we don't pay attention, we're careless, not mindful, not heedful, then if we have no shame about our deeds, then it's impossible for us to live a spiritual life, because we don't have the capacity to notice what our actions and speech are creating around us. We're just blind. A certain kind of blindness that cannot help us, support us on the spiritual path. So we have to be aware enough to notice what the effects of our being have on others, including on us, within us. How does our speech, how does our action, how do even our thoughts affect the mind? And then if we do wrong, if we have no fear of doing wrong ahead, or we think we might do something, but we don't realize that what we intend to do is wrong, it's unhealthy, it's spiritually dangerous, And it can affect others badly, can be for the not well-being of others. We have to be conscientious and have a conscience about not doing that, not partaking, not stealing, not killing. There are those gross forms, but also deceiving, taking information that doesn't belong to us. That's very widespread now. It's fascinating how much is stolen now, like data, stealing data. You can do that anonymously, shamelessly. But in fact, this has grave consequences and is so harmful to people. So it may not look wrong, but the consequences of what one is doing are horrific and cause a lot of confusion, or mislead people, or make them lose money, like what hackers do. They purposely cause harm just for fun sometimes. But this is a very dangerous mischief. So you would never want to touch something that is contaminated. Here is this shameful factor. Like that, if we engage in thoughts or speech or actions that will pollute the mind or pollute our speech or even our acts, if we contaminate other people with nasty ways of talking or mean ways of acting, or even if we think very negative thoughts towards others, people can feel that energy. It can be very subtle. So that kind of contamination is one way of looking at it. Would you want to pick up something that was covered with nasty stuff? No. So we should have that kind of quality of moral shame, that not to spread around that sort of energy through our being, our different ways of being in the world. And in the same way, if you had a piece of iron and you knew that it was hot, it had been put in the fire, you wouldn't touch it, would you? Why would you not touch it? Because if you touched it, you would burn your hand. So moral fear is this conscientious refusal to engage in any kind of act in the future which could harm somebody, burn someone, or cause a fire in the world. By that I mean inflame other people by being mean, being nasty. So we try to prevent that kind of speech from coming out of our mouths or from engaging with people that we know do not have good ethical habits. We keep the company of the wise. We have good spiritual friends. We stay away from places and people and contacts and even materials that would influence our minds in ways that would lead to moral decline. So that's the moral fear. Moral shame is about what we may have done or what we're doing, and moral fear is to protect us in the future. And this is really important for even materials that we read, what websites we visit, and what kind of places we go to, and what kind of guests do we have coming to visit us? Are they of good moral character? And you might think, well, it doesn't matter. Even it's somebody you know, they have a drinking habit. And if you go and visit that person, they might encourage you to have a drink. But you don't want to drink because you know the power of that. So that's one of the precepts. So we encourage that. The Buddha was very wise. He didn't give us these precepts for no reason. So that's why there are these precepts to protect us. And people think that it's harmless, but anything that prevents us from being able to be very aware of the consequences of what we're doing and what we're influencing our minds with will affect our safety, our moral safety. And that's what we need to do. That was the second and third. The fourth, as long, monks, as we have vast learning, we are bound to progress spiritually and not decline. And by vast learning, I don't think that the Buddha means we have to go and know everything that's been written and have vast knowledge in that way. But I think he means more that we have a deep understanding of the Dhamma. A vast learning is a vast understanding of the boundless nature of what this Dhamma teaching is about. A vast, the scope that this Dhamma reaches in our lives is not narrow. It's not just about five precepts, but it's about this kind of teaching which shows us how spiritual well-being affects everything that we do. Even if you go to the movies, even if you take a course, a study course, how is that going to affect your mind? What is the subject you're learning? So vast learning means that at every age, when we're young, when we're teenagers, when we're 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, throughout our lifetime, we could be learning different things. But let us not waste our learning power on learning things that will lead to decline morally and spiritually. And monks, so long as we are diligent, we are bound to progress spiritually and not decline in our spiritual progress. And as long as we are established in mindfulness, and of course one would think this would be one of the first things leading to non-decline, but once we have all these other things in place, like the energy that is sustaining us, not just for the first year, the second year, the third year, but for all the many decades of our life, have that energy and that the faith, the energy, the inclination, the moral understanding and knowledge of what needs to be done, and the connection to the precepts, then we practice that day in and day out mindfulness of what we do, what we say, what we're thinking. These are not easy instructions to follow, but they're incentives and they're directions. If we follow these directions, we will progress spiritually and the way will open up. We're trying to achieve a certain result in our lives, which is happiness, well-being, and peace. And the Buddha is giving us instructions about how mindfulness is the path to the deathless, not the path to death. And he means spiritual life, spiritual joy and well-being. And of course, those who are endowed with wisdom, this will lead to their spiritual progress and not to their spiritual decline. And wisdom is, of course, the ability to judge what will lead to greater conviction, what will lead to greater understanding of the dangers in this world and help protect us from those dangers. In the past, can we reflect on what we did, and if we did and spoke and thought things that led to endanger our spiritual progress, then we know in the future to avoid those. And then we know that whatever actions we plan to undertake, whatever we speak or plan to say, and whatever we think, to be so mindful that we stay on track and not veer off track, because we might get lost in the bramble and run into poison ivy, such as I and Imola discovered at the front of our property this morning. But there's plenty of it. There is poison ivy all over the world. And it's a vine, a creepy vine. And it may not be recognizable. It won't flash lights at us and say, I'm poison ivy, watch out. You could just be wandering down the path and brush against it by meeting some innocent-looking stranger who offers to help you with some problem you have, but they have an ill-conceived plan to rob you. And you are not mindful of that, and so you get waylaid. It's very easy to be deceived these days. So we have to have that strong, not only mindfulness, but that insight knowledge about outward people and how they behave, and also about how our own mind behaves within us and where it leads us. Not to be led astray. And of course, people will sell us anything. We won't know. But then we try to get ourselves to safety. And the world is not a safe place. But the Buddha is giving us instructions about how to be morally safe. And if other people harm us, that is their karma. As long as we remain innocent, as long as we're in contact with the world, we do come into dangerous situations, as we have found out here. Even though we are trying to do good, protect good, and follow that which is spiritually wholesome, people come through the gate who don't have the same intention. The world is like that. And we live in this world. So we do the best we can. But as long as the mind is not poisoned by that, and we can forgive, we can be understanding, we can be compassionate, and stay close to that which brings well-being, happiness, and peace in our own hearts. And that we harm no one, even the one who comes here to harm us. We try not to harm them. Difficult, but food for thought nevertheless. So that's a reflection for today.